8 minutes now after 10 o'clock. I like your mustache. Gentlemen, if you're growing a mustache for Movember, let me give you a high five. Actually, there are some staff members who've grown a mustache, and it gives them a whole new look. Colin, for example, Ryan. Ryan hasn't gone for it.
Well, Mike and Al, they both have.
Mike and Al.
Yeah, there's a few others, too.
Okay, so you understand, folks, that it may be tough for me to say this, but maybe they're wasting their time. Did I say that? Maybe they're wasting their time.
Oh, and John Biggs, he might be running down
John
the hall
Biggs,
after you.
He's a big guy. Could you lock the door? Because he might be coming through the door.
Look out.
Is Movember a whole lot of fun, but a complete waste of time? Just asking the question. Here's something to think about right off the top. Movember, headed by Prostate Cancer Canada, four of their sponsors are drug companies that sell drugs for prostate cancer. Do you see where we're going, folks? Pam Colleen is in studio this morning, so let me do the drill. This is your captain speaking. Fasten your seatbelts because we are about to hit major turbulence. Good morning, Pam.
Good morning, Andy. This is a hot topic.
We're upsetting a lot of people, Pam.
Well, you know, we have to look at the healthcare system and say, where's our money going? Why is it that we're spending so much money on healthcare? And look at how sick we are. And one of the things we need to look at is this testing, screening, and see how effective it is in the end in terms of improving outcomes.
Give me a phrase. How effective is it?
Well, I mean, we're going to be talking to Dr. Alan Castles in a little bit. He's on the line with us, and we're going to talk to him about the numbers, the real numbers, in terms of how much this testing has improved the quality of our health.
I have a number of friends who've had prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Shaw was the poster boy, in a sense, for St. Joe's Hospital as they took the less intrusive method. I forget the fancy name they have for it now, but certainly much less intrusive than it has been in the past. But I am shocked at the number of people I know who have had prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Should they have gone in and had that very nasty surgery, or should they have just let it be?
I'm not here to say that. I'm just saying, you know, let's look at the hard numbers, and let's look at how much it's helping us overall as a society to do this type of screening. And in many, many cases, it's possible that it's better to not know anything at all, probably.
Better not to know. Whoa. Okay, before we introduce Alan Castles, I want to read a little poem from his book, because he's not only puts words together in prose, but also in poems. A little book called Disease Mongering. Here's the poem. Bear with me. Quinn was on a noble quest to find his perfect health. He had about 1,000,000 tests befitting of his wealth. When nothing told him anything, he tried to push his luck. But doctors all just shook their heads and ended up quite stuck. He paid $1,000 to get a CAT scan answer. They uncovered what he dreaded, a lump that could be cancer. It turned out, it didn't turn out all that bad. The lump was found benign, better than the nasty bug he picked up at the time. Quinn will tell you, now you ask, his awful tale of woe, and remind you that, yes, that sometimes it is better not to know. Good morning, Mr. Castles, the poet. How are you this morning?
Good morning. How are you?
You have a lot of fun writing these, don't you?
Yes. When you can mix Dr. Seuss with the disease mongering, you can have lots of fun.
And you, at the same time, upset a lot of people.
Yeah, well, I don't know if perhaps people might get some myths shattered, yes, and that would be upsetting for some people. But others, you know, would say, well, I'm glad you took us to a different level.
Well, our intro this morning is already upsetting a lot of people, and we have them right in the radio station here who are growing a mustache for Movember.
Well, incidentally, so am I. So I've got a very cheesy, 3-week-old mustache sitting on my face too, and because a friend of mine, his father passed away from prostate cancer, and he said, would you? And I said, growing facial hair is something I can do in my sleep. So yeah, sign me up.
Okay, here's the question. Growing a mustache is fun. A lot of guys are having fun with it. There's a lot of camaraderie.
Yeah.
And you, by growing a mustache, extend, it's a great morale booster for people who've had prostate cancer. But here's the bottom line. In the end, does it do any good at all?
Well, when you say it, let's just define what we mean by it. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with raising money to do better research on prostate cancer. Whether that money is just to create more drugs or anything, that's obviously very controversial. But just looking at the issue of screening, so it used to be that men over the age of 40 would get offered an annual PSA test and a digital rectal exam, basically to see if they have any signs of cancer on their prostate. You know, a high PSA, so this is just a measurement of an antigen in your blood, very easy to measure. A high PSA, defined as high, could be a number of things. It could be that you have an infection. It could be that you had recently had sex. It could be a number of things. And it could also mean that you have prostate cancer cells on your prostate. So the part of the problem with the real push for screening is, and this is, you know, based on looking at the evidence of screening, is that you're going to get a whole lot of men who are what we call overdiagnosed. So these are men who have prostate cancer. That prostate cancer will live with them probably until they die of something else, and will never go on to hurt them. Though it's very hard for people who have been diagnosed with a type of cancer to just want to watch and wait. So, okay.
Can you freeze that? Can I just get that last 20 seconds? That phrase, you have prostate cancer, but it probably will never hurt you. Is that what doctors are telling their patients when they discover cancer cells on their prostate?
Well, I think most doctors who look at data should be telling their patients that. I mean, the statistics are, if you're 50 to 60 years old, you have about a 50 to 60% chance of having prostate cancer.
But?
So, yes.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
So prostate cancer only kills about 3% of men. So if 60% of us have it when we reach a certain age, but it only kills 3%, the vast majority of that prostate cancer that they find in men are not going to hurt them.
Now, over the age of 40, though, the risk is about 2 in 1,000. Is that correct?
Of dying of prostate cancer?
From dying from prostate cancer?
Yeah, about that.
And so you talk a lot about risk and how they use these numbers to scare us into basically seeking treatment or screening or what have you.
Well, you know, a really good example is actually in today's papers. It's not about prostate cancer. It's about mammography. So when you look at what sort of cancer agencies and those groups that promote breast cancer screening, they say, you know, we are able to drop the rate of breast cancer by 30% by screening. And you look at those numbers and say, what do those mean? Well, really, the number of women whose lives get saved by mammography screening works out to about 1 in 2,000. So, you know, just to be clear, screening is an annual thing. So you would have to screen something like 2,000 women every year for 10 years to prevent one death.
Okay, so, Alan, let me jump in. There are some of our listeners who think, oh, wait a minute. I thought it was just Pam Colleen who was warning us about being over-tested and over-medicated. I'm glad you raised the issue of mammography, because when that came up this week, I thought of our interview. Now they're saying to women, don't be tested. Don't be tested before the age of 50. Regularly, so they're backing off. Is there a common thread going on here?
But definitely there's a common thread. And I mean, there's an article in the New York Times this morning as well, and it's reprinted in the Globe and Mail, where we are really starting to redefine what it means to have cancer. For example, and this probably will shock a lot of your listeners, there was a major study done in Scandinavia a number of years ago with women who had, they had discovered breast cancer in these women. And then they followed them, and guess what? It went away. Mm. You might say, what do you mean it went away? This was a very legitimate, it was a large enough trial that they found that a lot of cancers will regress, or what they thought was cancer might be something else.
Alan, Alan, we have to jump in with a short break. I am thinking of someone who at this very moment, who I know is listening, who has just had surgery for prostate cancer, mm-hmm. can barely walk at this moment. Yeah. I'm going to ask you when we come back, was it all or nothing. Because if you say that, he's going to throw something at the radio. I know. I'll be back to ask you that question in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Brian, I told you I was nervous about this interview. And I'm particularly nervous about the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. We're talking about prostate cancer. We're talking about Movember. We're talking about someone I know who has had prostate cancer surgery. We're talking about friends of mine whose sex life has gone into the sewer because they had prostate cancer surgery. Alan Castles, author, drug policy researcher at the University of Victoria, and the author of Selling Sickness, one book, and his next book, Seeking Sickness. Are you suggesting maybe some of these guys whose sex life has just died and they went through all that pain and they went through all that surgery, that there was a better way? Is that what you're saying, Alan?
Let's look at the numbers, okay? Now, we're talking again about screening healthy men. These are men that don't have any symptoms. You don't feel anything. You're not having any issues related to your prostate. You get a PSA test. It has a high reading. And then you're led down the road of having a biopsy and possibly surgery and so on. So when you look at the big studies of PSA testing, it finds that, you know, you'd have to screen, thousands of men in order to save, you know, an additional life. For example, a major European study found that you'd have to screen 1,410 men to save one life. Of those, 48 men would need treatment, so they would have surgery or chemotherapy and so on. So you're essentially taking a large pool of healthy men. You're finding disease in some of them, and most of that disease is not going to hurt them.
Now, you talk about randomized studies as being the gold standard. Now, how many randomized studies actually have been done to monitor outcomes to say that we're getting any benefit from this screening?
There's actually been quite a bit, and certainly in the two major forms of cancer screening, I'm talking specifically of tests of screening, PSA and mammography, there's been some very good randomized trials. So they compare populations of men who are screened against populations of men who haven't been screened. And guess what they find? They find that those who were screened actually do not have any greater life expectancy than those who aren't screened.
Wow. And now,
That's just shocking.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of six friends, six people I know, six men I know who've just had, in the last few years, prostate cancer surgery.
Right.
If all of their doctors, Alan Castles, if all of their doctors had said, yeah, we got your PSA count is up, but you know what? We're not going to worry about it.
Right.
Tell me what your thoughts are on what would be the state of health of those six men today.
Well, I think it varies by case, you know, case by case. And I wouldn't be able to diagnose and suggest what they would have needed. What I would have said that they do need is a very frank discussion with their doctor about the numbers. Like, if you're going to go to Vegas and gamble, you should have a sense of what your likelihood of winning or your likelihood of losing. And certainly in the PSA world, the likelihood of men ending up impotent, incontinent, and so on is very high if you've been through the treatment. And, you know, that's a real unfortunate reality. Especially if that treatment was unnecessary. Now, there was a really good book that was published just last year. It was called Overdiagnosed, and it's by this guy named Gilbert Welch. And in that book, Gilbert Welch basically says that there's about 1.5 million Americans out there, American men, who have been unnecessarily treated for prostate cancer. So this is not a small thing. Getting out there more widely known, and I think people, men especially, when their doctor starts offering PSA tests, are going to ask the hard question.
Okay, here's a hard question, Alan. I mentioned about, you know, having your sex life killed.
Yeah.
Then there's the whole issue of being incontinent.
Yeah.
Holy smokes, is that a curse on your life? Those two.
Yeah, and so, in fact, you know, and I don't want to scare your listeners, but there was a study done about 10 years ago, and it was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, found that about 60% of men were impotent 18 months after having the prostate surgery, and about 8% had urinary incontinence.
So why are doctors steering all these men into surgery?
Well, you know, it's a... it's a very interesting question. I shouldn't laugh because you know this isn't funny, but there is a lot of incentive to treat, and that incentive, some of it has to do with money, but some of it has to do with worry about legal issues. You know, what if a doctor didn't counsel a man on getting a PSA test, and then that man developed an aggressive form 6 months later and died? Would his family be able to sue the physician? I think that has happened in the U.S. I don't know if it's happened in Canada, but I know there is at least one case in the U.S. So there's that. There's also the issue about who benefits from doing all the prostate surgery. There's a very interesting book published a couple years ago called, and this, by the way, is the greatest title for a book. It was called The Invasion of the Prostate Snatchers. And this guy, he basically said that part of the reason why there's so much over-treatment of prostate cancer is because it's run by the surgeons. And if you're a surgeon and you've got a scalpel in your hand, everything that needs to be removed should be removed.
Alan?
No. Yeah.
Alan?
Yeah.
What you're saying is absolutely shocking. I mean, you're saying it in a calm voice. And if people aren't really paying attention, they have no idea just how explosive the comments you're making are. I'm thinking of my friends who have just had this surgery, listening to you say, okay, so your sex life is dead. You're now incontinent, and you went through all that pain. And you know what? It might have been better if you didn't know.
Right.
We have to take a short break for a news update. When we come back, I want to open up the phone lines. I'm almost afraid to because I can't imagine.
Hey, right. Just be clear. I'm wearing a mustache too, okay? So.
No. We know you're supporting, looking for research and finding a better way. Yeah, we want to talk more about that too, about the research.
Okay.
But I can't imagine how people would feel, even at the very suggestion you've made, that it might all have been for naught. We'll be back with Alan Castles in just a moment. Right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
There's a study done about 10 years ago, and it was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, found that about 60% of men were impotent 18 months after having the prostate surgery, and about 8% had urinary incontinence.
So why are doctors steering all these men into surgery?
There's a very interesting book published a couple years ago called, and this, by the way, is the greatest title for a book. It was called The Invasion of the Prostate Snatchers. And this guy, he basically said that part of the reason why there's so much over-treatment of prostate cancer is because it's run by the surgeons.
Absolutely. Shocking and explosive comments from our guest this morning. Andy Udman sitting in with Pam Killeen, talking to author Alan Castles, a drug policy researcher at the University of Victoria and the author of Selling Sickness, next book, Seeking Sickness. Alan, I want to drive this point home with our listeners, and I want to tell them that our lines are open, 643-1290. Let me take a ridiculous situation to make this point. We have a small town near London called Lucan. We have a part of London called Lambeth. Okay, let's just imagine, for the sake of this discussion, in Lucan, they have no doctors, and nobody gets no doctors who will test you for prostate. They won't test your PSA count. They don't test you for prostate cancer. In Lambeth, they test all the men for prostate cancer. Okay, and this goes over a period of 10 years. What are you saying about what the difference of the outcomes would be in those two communities on the specific issue of men and prostate cancer? We know in one community the men are having great sex, in the other one they're not. In the one community the men are totally incontinent in some cases, in the other are not. What are the outcomes?
Well, I think you may be exaggerating just a little bit. So if you've got the community without the doctors and without sending men for PSA tests, then you're not going to have a whole lot of overdiagnosis of prostate cancer. If you have the other community where the doctor is sending all men for a PSA test, a good percentage of them are going to have elevated PSA levels. Then the question is, those men will be put in a situation where, what do we do now? They'll be worried. They'll be wondering whether they should get surgery. They'll probably hear radio programs like this, and they'll say, does this mean that I am just going to have to live with this cancer that's not probably going to hurt me? What do I do? So I think the one community where the physicians are giving every man a PSA test, you're going to have a lot more anxiety, a lot more worry. And then you'll end up, obviously, with a lot more surgery and treatment.
So then the obvious next question.
Let me just say one
yep,
other
go
thing.
Ahead.
Statistically, the men in the community that are overtreated versus the one that isn't, they're not going to live longer. That's the main thing. Mm-hmm. If you're going to do screening because you want to increase the length of, you want to reduce the type of risk that would kill men, then you would imagine the screen community would have a better, the men would live longer.
A measure of success with cancer and cancer treatment is living in that 5-year basic frame, that span, right?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, if you die 5 years and a day later, you're still considered a success story in essence.
That's right. That's right. So the screening is good if it actually extends people's lives. And in PSA testing, they have found through, I think, very good quality research that it actually doesn't lead to men living longer.
Okay, so the obvious question we have to ask, why are doctors doing so much testing on these patients when you're probably better off in the community where they just say, prostate cancer, never heard of it, we don't test for it?
You know, it's a very good question, and part of it is like a lot of medicine is done because that's the way we've always done it. You know, we will offer men PSA tests or women mammography tests, or we'll give people flu shots and so on because that's the way we've always done it. And without people sort of critically thinking, well, is that actually that smart? Should we be revising what we do based on new research? I think over the last few years, the PSA world and the mammography world has absolutely done, I won't say a U-turn, but the ship is steering away from the iceberg, so to speak. And people are getting a much more realistic sense of what screening can and can't do.
Does this have to do with the fact that, I mean, we're just overspending, that our healthcare systems are imploding financially, or does it have to do with the actual numbers that you've uncovered?
I think it's the numbers that I'm talking about. I mean, the Canadian Preventive Task Force came out this week to talk about why we should be screening less for breast cancer. They didn't even talk about the cost of it. They really just talked about how many women are being screened again and how many women are likely being overtreated, and really what is the sort of overall health impact of all this screening. So, and you know, they didn't even mention the money, the cost. You know, obviously, screening for PSA testing is big money. Certainly, when you think about just the physician's time, the lab tests, and so on. But most of the money that is spent in screening is dealing with the downstream effects of it. It's the surgery.
Alan, sorry to interrupt. I just got to get to this question, and that is this: you've written a book called "Selling Sickness." Now you're coming up with one called "Seeking Sickness," and you have an article in the Vancouver Sun entitled "Cholesterol and Kids: Big Pharma Eyes New Market." You are painting Big Pharma as out for profits no matter what. Is that a fair comment?
Well, no matter what, you just have to follow the money in some of this stuff, right? And let me tell your readers what I wrote about in the Vancouver Sun, that there was a recommendation that came out at a big conference in the U.S. of cardiologists saying that we should start screening children for high cholesterol, which struck me as among the most absurd things that I've heard in a long time. And I hear a lot of absurd things because I spend a lot of time watching and listening to the pharmaceutical industry. You know, the whole idea of screening children for high cholesterol, you know, high cholesterol, first of all, isn't a disease. It is a risk factor for a future potential event. And those events, meaning a heart attack or stroke, happen in people when they're 60 or 70 or 80.
Let me just punctuate what you're saying by reading the quote. I'm reading from your article. Such a thunderbolt hit me recently when I learned that experts at a recent American Heart Association conference were recommending that more children should be screened for high cholesterol before puberty. Here's the quote I love. I checked to make sure it wasn't April Fool's Day, because this is the kind of dastardly stuff those medical jokesters sometimes try to get away with.
I was being a little glib, as you can imagine.
but we're chuckling here, and I'm saying, wait a minute, the hair on my neck is coming up because I'm so angry over what you're suggesting, if even a fraction of it is true.
Yeah, and you know, I still can't believe that the pediatricians at this conference would say that, oh yeah, there is some benefit in screening children for high cholesterol. Well, in my opinion, there is a benefit to the pharmaceutical industry in starting to get people at a very young age to start worrying about what is an essential chemical in their blood, and that's their cholesterol. And if you can get parents worrying about their kids' cholesterol at a young age, you're going to guarantee a market well into the future. Now, this sounds very crass and everything, and it wasn't the pharmaceutical industry that came out with these quotes or with this recommendation. It was, pediatricians who say, oh, yes, of course, we've got the best interests of children at heart. I find that really, really hard to accept.
Alan, at the end of the show, I'm immediately going to go to the phone, and I'm going to phone the London OPP, and I'm going to ask them how many cars have crashed in the last hour and how many of those people driving those cars were doctors, because they must be driving off the road hearing what you're saying, or are they?
Yeah, let's be clear. You know, I have a lot of friends who are doctors, and a lot of very, very good and careful and conscientious physicians. And a lot of them are going to look at these recommendations on cholesterol and act like I am, you know, check to make sure it's not April Fool's Day and say, you know, this is foolish. And a lot of these doctors as well are going to say, look, I know I'm told by my profession and guidelines that I'm supposed to offer men PSA tests when they turn 40, and I will tell them, these are what the numbers look like. Do you still want to go ahead and do it?
Doctor, I'm going to jump in. I'm going to ask Pam Colleen to give us the Reader's Digest version. Take all this syrup from the trees and make it into actual syrup, 40 gallons to one. What is Alan saying, if people haven't caught on?
Well, I'm not going to speak for Alan, but what I will say is that, you know, medicine is a business, and it makes no good business sense to come up with real, tangible cures for disease. It makes more business sense to make sure that we feel that we're sick, that we constantly seek treatment, and so on. If we're 100% well, imagine how many people would be out of business.
How would your doctor friends like that suggestion, Alan Castles?
Well, and I think a lot of doctor friends would say, it's great. You know, physicians are there to help people who are sick. They feel like they're wasting their time if they're just dealing with the worried well. And the worried well are the people who are concerned about, you know, do I need my PSA tested, my cholesterol tested, do I need, you know, so this idea that you are creating a sort of customers by making them worry about their health. Now, this is what selling sickness was really about, and this is kind of what seeking sickness is about, is that if you promote screening tests on the whole basis of you're going to be saving people's lives, then you better have some very good data to back that up.
Alan, yeah. I'm sure you have a brother. I'm sure you have a neighbor. I'm sure you have a cousin, somebody you work with, and they come to you and say, Alan, just between you and me, over a beer, are you saying, forget having your PSA test? Forget?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, if I've never had mine tested. I'm 48 years old, and I never will. Because I know that the downstream consequences of having a high PSA could put me in a state where I don't want to be.
Now, you talked, too, about the risk of biopsies, and that the more biopsies that are done, the more likely you'll be diagnosed with cancer.
This is another thing, too, Andy. There was a very good study. It was actually done in Ontario, looking at how did men fare after they had a prostate biopsy. And just so your listeners know, the prostate's the size about a golf ball. And what they do is they put needles into it, about 12 needles at a time, and they pull out tissue samples, and then they examine those samples for cancer cells.
Pam's on the floor groaning, and she's not even a man.
Right. Well, when I mention this, most men cross their legs and look at me funny. But
I've had mine crossed from the beginning of this interview.
So you get this procedure with all these needles into your prostate, and those needles have to perforate part of the rectum, and what that does is that it can put bacteria into your bloodstream. And so about 4 to 5% of men who had this procedure in Ontario, in one study that I just looked at, developed serious infections so serious they were hospitalized just because of the biopsy.
Okay, back to your brother-in-law, because yeah. I'm just getting back to what you just said, but I can hardly wrap my mind around it. Do you say to your close personal male friends, forget the PSA test?
Would I say that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say, well, I probably wouldn't go that far. I would say, here's what I think. You better have a good chat with your doctor. I mean, maybe someone maybe their father died of prostate cancer. Maybe they think that maybe their brother died of prostate cancer, and they think that they're higher risk. And so, I mean, that to me would mean then you need peace of mind. You have to actually bring these concerns to your doctor.
Okay, let me phrase it another way.
Yeah.
Are you saying all those guys on our staff and out there in London, Ontario, growing the mustache, the Movember mustache, mm-hmm. are having a great time, lots of laughs, lots of high fives, how's it looking today, that they're wasting their time?
No, I wouldn't say they're wasting their time. I think that, you know, just like the women that wear pink around breast cancer, you know, if you've been through something that you think saved your life and you want to help people, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. At the same time, if you're out there promoting and saying that every man should get screened for prostate cancer, then you're misleading people. So, you know, I wouldn't want to be involved in a Movember campaign. You know, by the way, I've got a cheesy mustache myself. I wouldn't want to be involved in a Movember campaign that spreads misleading information to men.
Okay, one more minute and we have to let you go.
Yeah.
Boil that all down, because some people are just shaking their heads, can't believe what you've been saying about PSA tests,
yeah.
about being why you would even be tested for prostate cancer. You're saying, basically, if I get the message and I want to make sure I'm getting the right message here, you're probably better off if you don't even get the test.
Yes, and I would say that knowing this, before you get the PSA test, do as much research as you can. Find out the statistics, and you know I'm going to have this in my book that will come out in April. Find the statistics on the chances of benefit. If you're going to Vegas, figure out what your chances are, and then go and have the conversation with your doctor and say, look, I've read this. I understand that a lot of men have to be screened and very few of them are going to benefit. Is it worth me doing this? And I think that's the conversation that you need to have. And I think doctors are going to get the picture that they got to be prepared to have patients asking hard questions.
Okay. Do you have a website?
www.alancastles.com.
Okay. And one book written, it's called Selling Sickness. You got another one out?
Well, you know, the little pink one with the poetry, the ABCs of disease mongering.
Okay, Ron wants to jump in here before we let you go. Ron, go ahead.
So I have a question. What's the difference between a PSA test and a colonoscopy?
They're looking at completely different organs. The PSA test is looking at your prostate and the colonoscopy is looking at your colon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Ron, appreciate it. Okay, Alan, really appreciate it. Wow.
My pleasure. It was fun.
Thanks so much, Alan.
It was shocking is what it was. Alan, thank you so much. We're going to take a short break. Then I'm going to ask Pam to come up from under the table and just tell me what to really boil that down. What did he really say in the last half hour? Absolutely amazing. Back with Pam Colleen in just a moment here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
Hi, Dave.
A study done about 10 years ago, and it was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, found that about 60% of men were impotent 18 months after having the prostate surgery, and about 8% had urinary incontinence.
So why are doctors steering all these men into surgery?
There's a very interesting book published a couple years ago called, and this, by the way, is the greatest title for a book. It was called The Invasion of the Prostate Snatchers. And this guy, he basically said that part of the reason why there's so much over-treatment of prostate cancer is because it's run by the surgeons.
Wow. Pam Colleen, what did he say in the last hour?
Well, I think what he's saying is that we need more critical thinking. We can't just take things for face value. We're not doing enough research. We're not questioning the authorities, the experts, because, of course, a lot of this research is simply coming from marketing-based science. It's not real science. It's not evidence-based science that we're looking to for support.
But our local doctor, the man we love and trust with the diploma on the wall and all the degrees and the white jacket and the big words that we... He's saying, have the PSA test.
Right, but he may not know how to decipher between evidence-based science and marketing-based science. So we need critical thinkers like Dr. Alan Castles who actually can decipher the difference between the two and look deeper than face value. I mean, a lot of the science that's published today is no more than just marketing. It's not about reality whatsoever. And this is my biggest complaint. This is my biggest worry in society today is that we're relying on a lot of this science, but it's not real science.
Okay, I have to ask you real quickly. You were at the rally yesterday, Michael Schmidt's rally for raw milk at Queen's Park. You actually sat in the legislature?
Yes, yes. I was invited in by an MPP, Jack McLaren, and we were introduced to all the MPPs in the room, and I sat in on the session for just a little while, not very long.
Impressions?
I was really kind of shocked by the behavior that I saw. I saw a lot of people just chattering and talking and socializing, and people were trying to share information. And,
okay, but our own Chris Bentley, who we love and adore, I'm sure he was furiously taking notes when you were making your presentation on raw milk.
Well, I saw Chris Bentley there, and he was texting and...
during your presentation?
Well, no, during other people's, the MPPs were all doing short presentations, and he was talking to his neighbor, and he was texting, but he wasn't the only one. A lot of them were doing that. I was kind of appalled by what I saw in the legislature. I thought that I would see a little bit more seriousness and, maybe some interaction, some questions, but they weren't even paying attention in many cases.
We had video this week of one of our MPs literally falling asleep with the camera on him, his mouth open. So that's the kind of respect you get from some of our politicians. Unbelievable. Anything else you want to say? Got any book signings?
I have a book signing this weekend at Chapters at Fairview Mall in St. Catharines. And also tomorrow, I'd like to bring somebody on the show who is at the National Farmers Union Conference. And she's written a book on food sovereignty, which is essentially what we were doing at Queen's Park yesterday. As we were talking, we were there to support food sovereignty.
It's happening right down here in Wellington Road.
Right at the Four Points Sheraton. It's a huge national conference from the National Farmers Union. And these people are a big part of the solution, Andy.
And how much media attention will they get?
Well, we didn't get any media attention yesterday for our efforts at Queen's Park, and I doubt very much that the National Farmers Union will get any media attention. I mean, everybody's asleep at the wheel on this issue. We have to get real food back on our kitchen table.
Wow. Thanks, Pam. Wow.
Thanks,
just
Andy.
Unbelievable, some of the things Alan shared with us. Okay, 11 o'clock news just around the corner. When we come back...